Osho, the golden future, responses to disciples' questions, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 3.
Beloved Bhagwan, many years ago, it seems, I used to be able to meditate, I think, a beautiful, silent, transparent state would arise from somewhere. I presumed this was meditation. Now, nothing comes except a racing mind. What happened?
It always almost happens this way. The days when you were feeling a kind of meditation happening to you were the days you were not looking for it. It was happening to you, now you are trying to happen it, and that makes all the difference. All the things that are really valuable in life only happen. You cannot manage them to happen. You cannot do them. It may be meditation, it may be love, it may be blissfulness, it may be silence. Anything that goes beyond your mind is beyond your capacity to do it. You can do only things which come in the territory of the mind. The mind is the doer, but your being is not a doer. Your being is just an opening and a deep acceptance of whatever happens, with no complaints, with no grudge, just a pure gratefulness, and that too is not done by you. That is also part of the happening. We have to make this distinction very clear. Almost everybody gets confused. something happens to you, it is so beautiful, so blissful. The mind starts immediately desiring that it should happen more. That it should happen more often. That it should go deeper. The moment mind comes in, it disturbs everything. Mind is the devil, the destroyer. So one has to be very aware that mind should not be allowed to interfere into things of the beyond. Mind is perfectly good, a mechanic, a technician. Give your mind what it can do, but don't let it interfere in things which are beyond its capacity. But one of the problems is that mind is nothing but desiring for more. As far as the world of doing is concerned, you can have a bigger house, you can have a better house, you can have better furniture, you can do everything better. It is within the capacity of the mind. But beyond the mind, mind can only desire, and each desire is going to be frustrated. Instead of bringing more meditation, it will bring you more frustration. Instead of bringing you more love, it will bring to you more anger. Instead of silence and peace, it will bring more traffic of thoughts. And that happens almost to everybody. It is something natural that one has to grow out of it. You are saying many years ago, it seems I used to be able to meditate. A beautiful, silent, transparent state would arise from somewhere. I presume this was meditation. Neither you were expecting it, nor you were desiring it. It was just a guess, like a breeze that comes to you. but you cannot keep it, and you cannot order it to come. It comes when it comes. And once you understand this, you start trying. You have heard the expression, try and try again. I would like to say to you, untry and untry again. Whenever the idea of trying arises, immediately drop it. It is going to lead you into failure, into frustration. And if you can drop it, and everybody can drop it, because it never brings anything. What is the problem in dropping the failure, frustration, despair, hopelessness? Just drop them and forget all about meditation. And one day suddenly you will find a window open and a fresh breeze with new rays has filled your heart. Again, don't commit the same mistake. Thank for what is happening, but don't ask for more, and more will be coming. Don't ask that come again. Your asking will become the barrier. It will come again. It will come more often. Slowly, slowly it becomes your heartbeat, waking, sleeping, it is always there. It never goes. But it is not your doing. You cannot brag about it that I have done it. You can only say that I have allowed the unknown to do it to me. It is always the unknown. That great experiences enter into our small heart. And when we are trying hard to get them, we become so tense that very tension prevents them. When you are not trying, and you are relaxed, you are not even bothered about meditation and things like that. You suddenly find the footsteps of the unknown. Something from nowhere approaching to you. Look at it with wonder, not with desire. Look at it with gratitude, but not with greed. you are saying now doing now nothing comes except a racing mind. What happens? You became aware of the unknown and a little taste of meditation, and you became greedy, desirous. And your desire, your greed, it spoiled the whole game. Still, everything can be put right. You see the mind continuously racing, let it race. You simply watch. Just be a bystander, an observer. Just watching the mind is one of the greatest secrets of life, because it doesn't seem how it works, but it works. Just as you watch indifferent, uninterested, as if it has nothing to do with you, those thoughts start getting thinner, less traffic on the track of the mind. Slowly, slowly there are small gaps, and in those gaps you will have a glimpse of what you used to have. But don't jump upon it. Don't be greedy. Enjoy it. It will also pass. Don't try to cling to it. Thoughts will start coming again. Again a gap will come, a bigger gap. Slowly, slowly bigger gaps will be happening when the mind will be empty. In that empty mind, the beyond can enter in you. But the basic condition is that you should not cling to it. If it comes, good. If it does not come, perhaps you are not right. Perhaps it is not the right time. Still be grateful. One has to learn watchfulness and gratefulness. Even when nothing is happening that you deep down want to happen, still be grateful. Perhaps it is not the right time for you. Perhaps it will not help your growth. I have always told you the story of a Sufi mystic, gymnast. He was the master of Al-Hillaj Mansur. Because of Mansur, he became world famous. Mansur was killed by the orthodox traditionalist fanatics. And because of Mansur, Junaid's name also became famous. Mansur was Junaid's disciple. Junaid used to go for a pilgrimage every year to the Mohammedan holy place Kaaba. It was not very far from his place. Otherwise, Mohammedans are expected by their tradition at least once in a life you should certainly go to Kaaba. Otherwise you are not a complete Mohammedan. But it was so close from his place that every year he used to go with his disciples. He was a revolutionary kind of thing. In fact, the other kind than the revolutionary are not saved. Just faces, actors, pretenders and hypocrites. The people in the villages where Junaid has to pass were very angry against him. Few villages were so angry that they will not give him anything to eat or even water to drink, and will not allow him to stay in the village. And it was Junaid's usual prayer. Mohammedans pray 5 times a day. And after each prayer, he will raise his hands to God and will say that I am so grateful to you. How should I express my gratefulness? You take my care in every possible way. Your compassion is infinite. Your love knows no bond. The disciples were tired because 5 times every day, and in situations where they could see there is no care taken by God, they have not received the food, they have not received the water, they have not received the shelter in the hot sun in the desert. Once it happened for 3 days continuously, they were thrown out, stoned, no food, no water, no shelter. But Junnar continued his prayer the same way. Third day, the disciples freaked out. They said, enough is enough. What are you saying? That you are compassionate, that your love is great, that you take care of us in every possible detail, and for 3 days we have not eaten a single thing, we are thirsty, we have not slept under shelter, we have been sleeping in the desert, in the cold night, shivering. For what you are being grateful? The answer that Junnar said to his disciples is worthy to be remembered. He said, for these 3 days, do you think I cannot see that food has not been given to us, that we have been thrown out, that we have been stoned, that we are thirsty, that 3 days we have to remain open in the desert? Don't you see that I am also aware of it? But this does not mean that he is not taking care of us. Perhaps this is the way he is taking care of us. Perhaps this is what we need at this time. It is very easy when life is going comfortably, you can thank God. That thankfulness means nothing. These 3 days I have been watching slowly, slowly. All of you have stopped thanking him after the prayer. You failed the test. It was a beautiful test. Even if death comes to me, I will die with gratefulness. He gave me life. He took it away. It was his. It is his. It will be his. Who am I to interfere into his affairs? There will be times when you will not find any moment of peace, silence, meditation, love, blissfulness. But don't lose hope. Perhaps those moments are needed to crystallize you, to make you strong. not only to be grateful when things are going good, but to be grateful when everything is going wrong. And a man who can be grateful when everything is going wrong is really grateful. He knows the beauty of gratefulness. And for him, things cannot go wrong forever. His gratefulness is such a transforming force. It is going to change everything. So don't be worried about the racing mind. Let it race. Allow it to race as fully as possible. Don't prevent it. Don't try to stop it. You just be a watcher. You get out of the mind and let the mind race. And soon, without fail, as a natural law, gaps will start happening. And when gaps happen, don't get too much happy that I have got it. Remain relaxed. Enjoy those gifts also, but without greed and without desire, because they will disappear. And they will disappear soon if you become greedy. If you remain ungreedy, undesirous, they may stay longer. This is the whole training of meditation. Soon the day comes when the mind is completely silent. Filled with great joy, silent. But remember, it is not your doing. Even if for a single moment you think it is your doing, it may disappear. Always remember that you are the doing of the existence. And all that is great is going to happen to you, not by your effort, but by your relaxed openness, availability. Just keep your doors open. The guest will come. It has never been otherwise. The guest always comes. That son became an actress, and one evening rushed home to his father in a state of great excitement. Guess what dead, he announced, I have just been given my first part. I play a man who has been married for 25 years. Keep it up, my son, said Pet. Someday you may get a speaking part too. In the case of Veena, it is just the opposite. Right now you are on the speaking part. Just keep on. Someday you will get certainly the silent part too. But there is nothing to be worried. Life has to be taken very playfully. With a great sense of humor, in good times, in bad times, when things are happening and when things are not happening, when the spring comes and when sometimes the spring does not come to you. Remember that we are not the doers as far as things beyond mind are concerned. We are only receivers. And to become a receiver, you have just to become a watcher of your mind. Because through watching those gaps appear, in those gaps your door is open. And through that door, its stars can enter in you, flowers can enter in you. And even when stars and flowers enter in you, don't be greedy. Don't try to keep them in. They come out of freedom, and you should remember that they will remain with you only in freedom. If you destroy their freedom, they are destroyed too. Their freedom is their very spirit. It is my continuous experience of thousands of people when they come for the first time to meditate. Meditation happens so easily because they don't have any idea what it is. Once it has happened, then the real problem arises. Then they want it. They know what it is. They desire it. They are greedy for it. It is happening to others and to them it is not happening. Now jealousy, envy, all kinds of wrong things surround them. always remain innocent as far as things beyond mind are concerned. Always remain amateur. Never become an expert. That is the worst thing that can happen to anybody.
Beloved Bhagwan, a few days ago, I heard you say that the voice speaking inside of us is always the mind. So I wonder who in me is hearing this voice. When I try to find the answer, I only find silence.
The moment you look into yourself, you only find silence. But are you not aware that you are also there? Who finds the silence? Silence itself cannot find itself. There is somebody as a witness who is finding the silence. Just your focus is wrong. You are still focusing on the object. Just an old habit. You have cultivated for many, many lives that you always focus yourself on the object and you always forget yourself. An ancient Eastern story is that 10 blind men passed this tree. The current was very strong, so they took hold of each other's hands. They were afraid somebody may be taken away by the current. They reached the other shore. Somebody amongst them suggested, it is better we should count, because the current and the stream was really dangerous. Somebody may have slipped and we may not be even aware. So they started counting. And there was a great shock and they were all crying and weeping. Everybody tried, but the count was always nine, because nobody was counting himself. Naturally, he will start counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. My God, one has gone. So they all were crying. One woodcutter was seeing all this drama, and he said, he has never seen 10 blind men together in the first place. Second, what a stupid idea these people have. What was the need to cross a stream when it is so strong and flooded? And above all, now they are counting and crying and weeping for someone they do know not who. But someone certainly is taken away by the current. And watching them counting, he was simply amazed that how is it possible? 10 persons they are, but the count always comes to 9. But some help was needed, so he came down from his tree and he said, what is the matter? They all said that we have lost one of our friends. We were 10 and now we are only 9. The man said, I can find your 10th man. You are right, you used to be 10. But there is a condition. They said, we will accept any condition but our friend. He said, no, it is not a very big condition, it is a simple condition. I will hit on the first man's head. He has to say 1. Then I will hit on the second person's head 2 times. He has to say 2. Then I will hit on the third person 3 times. He has to say 3. As many times I hit, the person has to speak the number. They said, if this is the way to find the last friend, we are ready. So he enjoyed very much hitting, and he will hit them, and when he hit the 10th man 10 times, he said, 10. All the 9 said, you idiot, where you have been? Unnecessarily we have all been beaten. Where you have been hiding up to now? He said, I was standing here. I was myself counting. It was always coming to 9. This man seems to be a miracle man. He managed. The story is significant for the simple reason that it has become our habit not to count ourselves. So when you are watching inside your thoughts, you are not aware that there is a watcher too. When you are watching silence, you are not aware that how can you watch silence if you are not there. Chit Vilas, you are asking, a few days ago I heard you say that the voice is speaking inside of us is always the mind. So I wonder who in me is hearing this voice. Certainly I am not hearing. And as far as I know, nobody else is hearing it. You must be the guy who is hearing this voice. Everybody else has his own problem. When I try to find the answers, I only find silence. But then too the question arises, who finds the silence? It is the same guy who was hearing the voice. His name is Chidvilas. You have to become more subjective, more alert of yourself. We are always alert of everything around us. Pat followed his friend Mike's example and left Ireland to work in England. Though they had since lost contact, Mike had mentioned how easy it was to get a job at Vincennes Open Zoo. So Pat applied. Unfortunately, they had no keepers available. There was not even the position of a sweeper vacant. But I tell you what, Pat, the manager said, the gorilla died a couple of days ago. And what is a Jew without a gorilla? But we have kept his pelt entire. Now if you crawl into that skin and take over his enclosures, we will feed and house you and pay you handsomely as well. Pat had a look over the lovely field that was the gorilla enclosures. He surveyed the comfortable gorilla house and tested the bed provided. He agreed to take the job. Very soon Pat had become a great favorite with visitors to the zoo. Being a bit of an extrovert, he would always put on a good act, tumbling, chest thumping and growling. But the climax of his performance was most popular. Whenever there was a good crowd, Pat would scale a large oak tree at the side of his enclosure where it adjoined the lion's pen and pelt the lion and lioness with acorns. The big maned lion in particular would roar with rage and stomp about, and the crowd would roar with delight. One public holiday, a particularly large crowd had gathered, and Pat was aloft and reaching the peak of his performance. He had just finished off the acorn pelting with a bit of chest thumping when the branch he was balanced on broke. He fell to the ground at the lion's feet. Pat jumped up, shouting for help, and was about to scrapper when the lion whispered, "Hold your tongue fast. Sure, do you want to lose us the best job we have ever had?" So here everybody is having different skins only. Inside is the same consciousness. Whether you are hearing a voice or you are hearing silence, remember more about yourself. Who is the watcher? Who is the witness? And in every experience, when you are angry, when you are in love, when you are in greed, when you are in despair, the same key. Just watch that, are you really in danger or you are only a witness? Just here we are sitting. Deep down who you are, always a witness. Whatever happens on the outside, you may be young, you may be old, you may be alive, you may be dead. Whatever happens on the outside, inside is the same witness. And this witness is our truth. This witness is our ultimate reality. Our eternal reality. So all your work is concerned to shift your focus from the object to the subject. Don't be bothered about anger or silence or love. Be concerned about to whom all this is happening. And remain centered there. And this centering will bring you the greatest experience of your life. It will make you a superman.
Beloved Bhagwan, 11 years ago, when I first sat in front of you, I was so overwhelmed by your energy, by your love, by you, that I could do nothing but cry and bow down to your feet in silent expression. And yet I felt very much understood by you. At that time, you told me to keep my energy inside and to bring it to my Hara. Since then, this suggestion stays with me, and my belly has become my best friend, and the place below my navel a mirror of my feelings. In all this time, tears and laughter of joy and gratitude for being able to spend this life with you have kept back most of my words. My beloved master, I feel that behind this small suggestion of yours lays more than I can imagine. Would you please say something more about the horror and guide me further?
Deva Radhika, Hara is our center. From there, life leaves the body. It is the center of death. The word Hara is from Japanese. That's why in Japan, suicide is called Harakiri. The center is just two inches below the navel. The center is very important. And almost everybody else in the world has felt it, but only in Japan they have gone deeper into its implications. Even the people in India who had worked tremendously on centers had missed Hara. And the reason for their missing was because they never considered death to be of any significance. Because your soul never dies. So why bother about a center that functions only as a door for your energies to get out and to enter into another body? They work from sex, which is the life center. And they work on seven centers, but they have not even mentioned Hara in no Indian scripture. The people who worked hardest on the centers for thousands of years have not mentioned Hara. Cannot be just a coincidence. The reason was that they never took death seriously. These seven centers are life centers, and each center is of higher life. The seventh is the highest center of life, when you are almost a god. The Hara is very close to the sex center. if you don't rise towards higher center, towards the seventh center, which is in your head, and you remain your whole life at the fixed center, then just by the side of fixed center is the hara. Then life will end and the hara will be the center from where your life will move out of the body. Why I have told Radhika because she was very energetic but not aware of any higher center. Her whole energy was at the sixth center and she was overflowing. And the energy at the sex center overflowing is dangerous because it can start releasing from the hara. And if it starts releasing from hara, then the possibility to take it upward becomes more difficult. So I had told her to keep her energy in. Don't be so expressive. Hold it in. I simply wanted the hara center to be completely closed, which was opening and which could have been very dangerous. And she followed it. And she has changed a totally different person. Now when I see her, I cannot believe her expressiveness that I had seen for the first time. Now she is more centered. And her energy is moving in the right direction of higher center. It is almost at the fourth center, which is the center of love. Which is a very balancing center. There are three centers below it, and three centers above it. And once a person is at the center of love, there is very rare possibility for him to fall back lower because he has tasted something of the high. Now valleys will be very dark, ugly. He has seen sunlit peaks, not very high but it's still high. Now his whole desire will be And that is the trouble of all lovers. They want more love. Because they don't understand that real desire is not for more love, but something more than love. But their language ends with love. They don't know any idea that is more than love, and love does not satisfy. On the contrary, the more you love, the more thirsty you become. The fourth center of love sees a tremendous satisfaction only when energy starts moving to the fifth center. Fifth center is in your throat. And the sixth center is your third eye. And the seventh center, the sestrar, is on the top of your head. And all these centers have different expressions and different experiences. When love moves to the fifth center, then whatever talents you have, any creative dimension is possible for you. This is the center of creativity. It is not only for songs, it is not only for music, it is for all creativity. The Hindu mythology has a beautiful story. It is a mythology, but the story is beautiful, and particularly to explain to you the fifth center. Indian mythology thinks that there is a constant struggle between the evil forces and the good forces. And they both discovered that if they do a certain search into the ocean, they can find nectar. And whoever will drink it will become immortal. So they all tried to find it. But as life balances everywhere, there too, before they found the nectar, they found poison that was hiding the nectar underneath it. Nobody was ready even to taste it. even the very sight of it created sickness. And one of the men they talked to, who is the first hippie of the world, perhaps he may be ready. He is the god Shiva. So they asked god Shiva, "You test it." He said, "Okay." He not only tested it, he drank it all over. It was pure poison. But as he tasted it, it was pure poison. He held it just into his neck at the hip center. Because at the fifth center, which is a creative center, became completely poisoned, Shiva became the god of destruction. The Hindus have three gods: Brahma, who creates the world, and Vishnu, who sustains the world, and Shiva, who destroys the world. But his destruction came from his creative center being poison. And the poison was so much that it cannot be a small destruction. He can only destroy the whole existence. So when Vishnu is tired of maintaining it, Shiva destroys it. And by that time, Brahma has forgotten. Millions of years have passed. He did create the world. He again starts creating it. Just old routine. So Brahma is the creator god, but in the whole of India there is only one temple devoted to Brahma. Because who cares about him? He has done his work. It is futile to say anything to him. Vishnu have millions of temples because he is the sustainer god. Krishna and Rama are all incarnations of Vishnu. But nobody can compete with Shiva. Shiva has more shrines to him than anybody else. And he is a hippie, so he does not need very great temples or anything. Just anywhere under any tree, you just put a round stone, oval shape, and he does not ask much. Few leaves, not even flowers. Few leaves you drop there, few drops of water on his head just to keep him cool. So people have created devices. You just hang a small pot on top of his head with a small brick breath, breath. It keeps him cool, so he does not get annoyed at anybody and destroys the world. And everybody is afraid of him, so naturally he has many more worshippers, many more temples, many more shrines. Every small village you will find at least a dozen Shiva shrines, because they cost nothing. Any poor man can afford it. And he has to be worried about, because he is going to destroy. Keep him satisfied. And he does not ask much. Just keep his head cool. And flowers are costly, just any two leaves. And his worship is finished. But he became the destroyer of the world, because his fifth center got the whole poison of existence accumulated there. It is our creative center. That's why lovers have a certain tendency to creativity. When you fall in love, you suddenly feel like creating something. It is very close. If you are rightly guided, your love can become your great creative act. It can make you a poet, it can make you a painter, it can make you a dancer, it can make you in any dimension to reach to the stars. And the sixth center is between the two eyes, which we call the third eye, which gives you a clarity, a vision of all your past life and all of the future possibilities. And once your energy has reached to your third eye, then you are so close to enlightenment that something of enlightenment starts showing its radiation from the man of the third eye. And he starts feeling a pull towards the seventh center. Because of these seven centers, India never bothered about Hara. Hara is not in the line. It is just by the side of the sixth center. Sex center is life center, and Hara is death center. And too much excitement, too much uncenteredness, too much throwing your energy all over the place is dangerous, because it takes your energy towards the Hara. And once the root is created, it becomes more difficult to move it upwards. Hara is equally parallel to the sex center. So the energy can move very easily. It was a great discovery from the Japanese because they found that there is no need to cut your head or shoot your brain to kill. They are all unnecessary painful. Just a small knife exactly forced at the Hara center, and without any pain, life disappears. Just the center should be open, and life disappears as if the flower opens and the fragrance disappears. The Hara should be kept closed. That's why, Radhika, I had told you to be more centered and to keep your feelings inside and to bring it to your Hara. Since then, this suggestion stays with me, and my belly has become my best friend, and the place below my navel a mirror of my feelings. If you can keep your Hara consciously controlling your energies, it does not allow them to go out. You start feeling a tremendous gravity. A stability, a centeredness, which is a basic necessity for the energy to move upwards. You are asking, I feel that behind this small suggestion of yours lay more than I can imagine. Certainly, there is much more. A pole is walking down the street and passes a hardware store advertising a sale on a chainsaw that is capable of cutting 700 trees in 7 hours. The pole thinks that's a great deal and decides to buy one. The next day he comes back with the saw and complains to the salesman that the thing did not come close to chopping down the 700 trees that the ad said it would. "Well," said the salesman, "let us test it out there." Finding a log, the salesman pulls the starter cord and the saw makes a great roaring sound. "What is that noise?" asks the pole. So he must have been cutting by his own hands. It was an electric saw. Radhika, your Hara center has so much energy that if it is rightly directed, enlightenment is not as far of a place. So these two are my suggestions. Keep yourself as much centered. Don't get moved by small things. Somebody is angry, somebody insults you, and you think about it for hours. Your whole night is disturbed because somebody said something. If the hara can hold more energy, then naturally that more energy starts rising upwards. There is a certain capacity only in hara. And every energy that moves upwards moves through the hara. Just the hara should be closed. So one thing is that the hara should be closed, and the second thing is that you should always work for higher centers. For example, if you feel angry too much, you should meditate more on anger so that anger disappears and its energy becomes compassion. If you are a man who hates everything, then you should concentrate on hate, meditate on hate, and the same energy becomes love. Go on moving upwards. Think always of higher ladders so that you can reach to the highest point of your being. And there should be no leakage from the hara center. India has been too much concerned about sex for the same reason, that sex can also take your energy outside. It takes. But at least the sex is the center of life. Even if it takes energy out, it will bring energy somewhere else. Life will go on flowing. But hara is a death center. Energy should not be allowed to move through hara. A person whose energy starts moving through hara, you can very easily detect. For example, there are people with whom you will find suffocated, with whom you will find as if they are sucking your energy. You will find that after they are gone, you feel at ease and relaxed. although they were not doing anything wrong to you. And just the opposite kind of people also you will find, whose meeting makes you joyful, healthier. If you were sad, your sadness disappears. If you were angry, your anger disappears. These are the people whose energy is moving on higher centers. Their energy affects your energy. We are affecting each other continuously. And a man who is conscious chooses friends and company which raises his energy higher. And the sense is very clear. There are people who suck you. Avoid them. It is better to be clear about it. Say goodbye to them. There is no need to suffer because they are dangerous. They can open your hara too. Their hara is open. That's why they create such sucking feeling in you. Psychology has not taken note of it yet, but it is of great importance that psychologically sick people should not be put together. And that's what is being done all over the world. Psychologically sick people are put into psychiatric institutes together. They are already psychologically sick, and you are putting them in a company which will drag their energy more lower. Even the doctors who work with psychologically sick people have given enough indication of it, because more psychoanalysts commit suicide than any other profession. More psychoanalysts go mad than any other profession. And every psychoanalyst once in a while needs to be treated by some other psychoanalyst. What happens to these poor people? Surrounded by psychologically sick people, they are continuously sad. And they don't know any idea how to close their haras. There are methods, techniques to close the hara, just as there are methods for meditation to move the energy upward. The best and simplest method is try to remain as much centered in your life as possible. But people cannot even sit silently. They will be changing their position. They cannot lie down silently. The whole night they will be turning and tossing. This is just unrest a deep restlessness in their soul. One should learn restfulness. And in these small things, and the heart are closed, and particularly psychologists should be trained, and psychologically sick people should not be put together. In the East, particularly in Japan, who has become aware of that center? In Zen monasteries, there is no psychologist as such. But there are in Zen monasteries small cottages far away from the main campus where Zen people live. But in the same forest or in the same mountain area. And if somebody is psychologically sick, is brought to them, he is given a cabin there and he is told to relax, rest, enjoy, move around in the forest, but don't talk. Anyway, there is nobody to talk. Only once a time the man comes to give food, he is not allowed to talk to him either. And even if he talks, the man will not answer. So his whole energy is completely controlled. He cannot even talk. He cannot meet anybody. And you will be surprised what psychoanalysis cannot do in years is done in 3 weeks' time. In 3 weeks' time, the person is as healthy as normal people are. And nothing has been done, no technique, nothing. Just he has been left alone, so he cannot talk. He has been left alone, so he can rest and be himself. Is not expected to fulfill somebody else's expectations. Radhika, you have done well. Just go on whatever you are doing, accumulating your energy in yourself. The accumulation of energy automatically goes higher. And as it reaches higher, you will feel more peaceful, more loving, more joyful, more sharing, more compassionate, more creative. And the day is not far away when you will feel full of light and the feeling of coming back home.
Yes, Bhagavan.
Thank you.